provides entertainment and escape. For many filmmakers and viewers, it is a vital portal into the lives of others, a medium of engagement, and a powerful tool for social action. Films will be shown from Thursday, October 6th through Wednesday, November 9th, and include the films Familia, Sing Your Song, An African Election, Windfall, and more. Again, that's Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center, located at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information about the films can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You can make sure KBOO Community Radio continues to inform and entertain Portland and the world for years to come by designating KBOO as a beneficiary in your will. Thank you for thinking about KBOO and the future of independent, community-supported media. For more information, contact Monica Beamer at 503-231-8032 or email monica@kboo.org.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music. PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.
Oh. Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm Leanne Kranz. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs every Friday at 6 p.m. on KBOO. Women have had this forum since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. We always welcome new members. So if you'd like to host, produce, or engineer with us, please contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, Bread and Roses. And please like us on Facebook under KBOO Bread and Roses. October is in the United States is Filipino American History Month and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Tonight on Bread and Roses, we play a conversation with community activist Pamela Santos about the importance of learning and celebrating Filipino American history and heritage, and about the specific ways domestic violence affects the Filipino American community. Pamela Santos is an almost native New Yorker from Queens, with brief stopovers in Florida and San Francisco. She has worked with Filipino American and Asian Pacific American communities in New York since her teens. A self-identified history nerd, she served on the board of the Filipino-American National Historical Society, Metropolitan New York Chapter. Pamela moved to Portland earlier this year to continue her activism in social justice and with communities of color. Also, she had to see our feminist bookstore. Pamela is a new KBOO volunteer working with the APA Compass Collective and on her own podcast, Geek as Verb. Coming soon. Pamela Santos sat with Delphine Crescenzo last week and shared personal anecdotes and historical facts to exemplify the diverse and crucial contributions Filipino Americans have made to this country. Here is Pamela Santos.
Pamela, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Thank you, Del.
I'd love to start with, you know, October being Filipino American History Month. If we could talk a little bit about how this celebration was made possible in the United States.
Well, not a lot of people know that, first of all, October at all is Filipino American History Month.
True.
And so I'm glad to at least bring some attention to it. I am a member of the Filipino American National Historical Society, and that FONS, national organization made up of several chapters all over the United States, was responsible for the campaign to nationally recognize and also on each individual state level recognize October as that History Month.
For the Filipino American community.
Yes.
And why is it so important to have such a celebration?
I think it's always important to recognize the wide spectrum of Americans who make up the people who live here. And Filipinos, a lot of times when you, at least me as a Filipino American, trying to learn about my history, learn about my heritage, a lot of the titles, even in articles or any kind of research being done, will preface it with the forgotten history of the Filipino American labor leaders, the unknown or untold history of World War II Filipino American veterans. So to even acknowledge that there's not enough material as they are presenting the material, made it clear to me that it's important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about, you know, why it's important for all of us to learn about that quote unquote untold, untold history.
So I had a junior high social studies teacher who took it upon herself to change the textbooks that she was told to use to teach our classes and supplement all of the material that was in it, because she didn't feel, and this is a Caucasian American woman, this is a white woman.
In what state?
New York.
In New York.
So I'm from New York, from Queens, the borough of Queens. And this lovely woman in this Catholic school of a Queens suburb just decided, nope, this is not, this history is too white and it's not presenting the kind of history that I want my students to learn.
Great.
And thinking back on that happened when I was in seventh grade and eighth grade, and for her to take a stand, and they let her, I guess it left a mark. And I think that if there were more opportunities for people who had the knowledge, whether or not they're Filipino or any kind of person of color, if they have that access to history information that shines a light on a particular community, then definitely. I mean, we just recently had this past Monday that people usually refer to as Columbus Day, but that there's a push to refer to it and have it recognized as Indigenous Peoples Day.
Which Seattle just did, and yes, Minneapolis.
I know, I was so happy. I moved to the right region.
Hopefully you did.
And so I read about that, and a lot of people are posting some things from quotes from Howard Zinn. And when he's talking about
people's history of the United States.
Yes. I don't even remember if my junior high teacher brought that up, but one of the parts of her curriculum that she had to change was to include more voices from Native American communities, mm-hmm. and the particular parts that she was teaching, taking those perspectives into account, into the history. And so it makes for a better, more robust, and definitely a more enlightened discussion when you're including more than one community's voice.
Mm-hmm. And so you were in seventh grade, you said?
When she said that, when she did that.
When mm-hmm. she did that. What was the impact on you? What was like your experience with, you know, history before that? And then how did that change your perception of understanding that, you know, history is also that of your people, of Native Americans, of African Americans, etc.?
And we are also still sort of, it just ended.
Hispanic Heritage Month.
I think when it comes to the impact, I don't think I was aware of it until adulthood. I think when you are young and impressionable, certain things that people say or do stick with you, and you need time to process and understand it and maybe have the language to understand what you just experienced or absorbed. And I swear, until today, I did not think about her mm-hmm. until just this second, because I was just unaware of her influence all this time on me, and that kind of stuck with me. Up until that time also, I was aware, even going throughout. So just to give background, I was born in the Philippines, and I came to Queens, New York, particularly Astoria, Queens, when I was 3.5 years old. And I lived in probably very, compared to some sections, some other parts of the country, very diverse neighborhoods mm-hmm. in New York City. And despite that, I wasn't completely understanding my identity as a Filipino American in relation to anything other than my family. Mm-hmm. That Filipinos are my family, and maybe that one other girl and that one other girl in my class, and there's just the three of us in the whole school. You know, it wasn't in the whole school, but in our class. Mm-hmm. Another Filipino joined up. Okay, so now there's four of us in the class. So it wasn't this very strong identification with being Filipino. I was just a girl. I think I refer to myself as American. I think I identified definitely as American, but it wasn't foremost in my mind as I'm forming my identity as a young person. It was only when I was probably 17 and volunteered and joined other youth going to a conference to talk about Filipino-American history. So that was when I was 17. And up until then, I wasn't really thinking too hard about those identity politics, besides thinking, well, I speak some Tagalog, some, you know, Filipino language, and this person does as well. I will join the Pinoy club in my high school because Pinoy is another word for Filipino. Filipino, and also it can refer to Filipino Americans, but it also refers to Filipinos all throughout the world as well. So Pinoy mm-hmm. Can be used interchangeably with that. Pinay is the female of that. And so you can join that club. In my school, it was called the Flip Club. Okay. So you can do all those little things. And until I think I got to when I was 17, it didn't coalesce into a conclusion. It didn't coalesce into this bigger idea. Mm-hmm. Oh, and one quick note. So Flip, I also should note, I didn't know until college, used to be a derogatory slur against Filipinos.
Who named that club that?
Young kids in the 90s. So I went to high school in the 90s. The people who founded it, because it was my friend's older cousins, so they did that in the 80s, I gotta say. So they had no, so it's the 80s. Mm-hmm. You didn't have the internet. You can't look these things up.
Well, I mean, you know, there's also movements to reclaim, you know, certain words. So not that one.
It's not that it's not that one. I don't actually feel the I haven't felt the negative weight of it as a slur. But it gives me mixed feelings. I think it makes me question when I hear that it was used to dehumanize, let's say, people, even if it's far removed from me, even if I didn't experience it myself, I have to take it just a second to think about it.
Yeah. So would you share a little bit with the listeners some of the history about and the contributions of the Filipino Americans to this country, right? You mentioned World War II, you mentioned the labor movement. Why was for you, what are some of the things for you, in your opinion, that all Americans should know about the contributions of Filipino Americans?
Okay. There are so many. Where can I start? I think even to start off maybe from why October was picked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fonz had particularly wanted October.
And that's the
Filipino American National Historical Society. Okay. So Fonz, they have a, by the way, they're kind of, they were founded in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest.
Okay, great.
Fred and Dorothy Cordova were the founders of Fonz. They were accumulating oral histories from people in Seattle and in that area. And then from that movement in the 70s on to the 80s is when they asked for proclamations recognizing it. So October is significant just because that is the first recorded landing, the first recorded arrival of Filipinos in what's considered the United States before it was the United States, actually, October 18, 1587. So around that time, let's go back to American history.
Yes.
You had different European nations sailing around the world, and a Spanish galleon ship, the Nuestra Señora de Esperanza, landed at what is now known as Morro Bay, California, and they had what was identified as a Filipino, Luzones Indios. And Luzon is one major huge, it's a part of the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So that's why that particular recorded landing, where you have to keep track of who was on the ship and that he was among those, or that there were several sailors aboard, among them from the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that little, you know, just it's a very small, I don't want to say small fact, but it's a fact that when I heard it when I was 17 at this history conference, and I mean, honestly, what teenager goes to a history conference? But geez,
good for you.
I was hungry. I didn't know that I was hungry for the knowledge. I didn't know that it wasn't around me. And as soon as I went, I was hooked from knowing that little bit, that little tidbit, and then taking the time to just realize, hey, you know, I think it's definitely important to know about history and culture from the Philippines, but that knowing that there were Filipinos here more than 400 years ago drove home the point that we've been here.
Yes.
We've been here. I just, you know, and it's So that's one part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's like a validation of most of your presence here.
Yes, yes. That I think the prevailing notion is that Filipinos or people of color are immigrants.
Exactly.
Or that visually we do not look like what is considered to be American. And that just drives home the point that we need to rethink about what we even visually put in our minds as American. What are the faces that we see? And I mentioned the Filipino labor leaders. There was Larry Ed Leong and Philip Veracruz among many of the other leaders who had organized separately and then alongside Cesar Chavez. Mm-hmm. And with their contributions in the Delano workers' strike, the Delano grapes, mm-hmm. That together was an important piece in the larger American labor movement with farm workers in California and in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that history tends to get lost when you don't acknowledge who they are as being Filipino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that thank you for sharing those pieces. I think it's as you mentioned, somewhat not part of the mainstream conversations around American history, that the contribution of others than just white is in fact true, valid, but also has really helped get us to the point that we are at right now with, you know, as Americans as a whole, right? So it's like those contributions of you know, whether it's Chavez or the Filipino organizers, you know, in the labor movement, whenever that is, history is diminished, then, you know, we don't give the right credit to, you know, why do we have the laws that we have in place around labor? Why do we have the unions that we have currently today, thanks to the contribution of these individuals?
That's exactly what I'm hoping that more people can wrap their minds around. I somewhat feel disheartened that more people don't think that way, that I and other people have to shout above that noise, mm-hmm. a little bit, and it can be tiring to have to explain the significance, mm-hmm. of something that should be significant.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly tonight, back to Fanny, who've been conquering male chauvinist hearts everywhere. This is their version of the Stephen Stills song, Special Care. Good night.
You
Filipina sisters from the West Coast doing their cover of Special Care. And David Bowie said he really liked their guitar work. You're listening to Bread and Roses. Tonight, we honor Filipino American History Month. Delphine Crescenzo sat with local activist Pamela Santos last week to discuss the incredible historical contributions of the Filipino American community starting in 1587. Here is Pamela Santos discussing further the implications of the contributions of Filipino labor leaders.
So is there anything else around Filipino-American contributions that you wanted to share with us?
Well, I mean, there's so much, but I think just that one little part that I wanted to get back to about the faces and also voices and the contributions of Filipino labor leaders. I wondered whether it would sound almost divisive that Filipinos, and I don't believe this actually, but I definitely am aware that the question out there, particularly when the Cesar Chavez biofilm, the film came out, that there wasn't enough coverage or credit given to Filipinos. And so you had some Filipino Americans asking about that and wanting to talk about it. And I think it's important to recognize that even just talking about it and wanting to talk about the missing recognition is not an effort to take away something from Chicano or Latin or Mexican American communities who are definitely, I feel like together there's opportunity to be proud together of contributions that we have done together. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the times, even just talking about it can be simplified as an us versus them, or yes, this is not my problem because I'm not Filipino. And I think it is everyone else's problem because we're all living in the same society. As far as I know, we don't have islands for each of us, physical islands yet. But just saying that something doesn't affect you is actually not the same as it not affecting you.
Yes.
And I think it's okay that people like me, and even people who are not Filipino, definitely, to feel curious to go out and take the opportunity to learn about communities not their own, should take that opportunity, but to also think that it's okay that Filipinos, if we are in positions where we can voice and talk about our community's history, that we'll take it. You know, I definitely want to bring up as an example the California Assembly member Rob Bonta. He represents Oakland, and he had introduced a bill, and it was signed by Governor Jerry Brown, AB 123, to make it a mandate that California schools include in their curriculum the contributions of Filipino labor leaders, Filipino American labor leaders, when talking about the California history of the farm labor movement. And he has personal experiences from his own family, from being in that movement, from his family and his parents. And if he wasn't in that position to be able to bring that to the table, the rest of California state schools wouldn't be reaping the benefits. So it makes a difference to include people of color in, let's say, elected offices, let's say media, any kind of outlet where they are able to bring something of themselves Not everyone is going to be able to say that they were on this particular shore, this particular shore of history, like Assemblymember Bonta. But we can say, you know, this was our collective history as Filipino Americans, but also as Americans, period.
Absolutely.
And it's not that hard to find it. I mean, I can't say how much how much we should all actually be grateful to people who have made the internet accessible and free to people who could access it, who have that access. Because I can find out about, and this is on Spotify, you can find out about the all-female rock band from the 70s. Sometimes they do Cream covers, Fanny. They were started by two Filipina-American sisters in the West Coast. And I wouldn't have known about that unless, thank you, Wikipedia. I found good sources just to back that up, and that David Bowie himself complimented their guitar work. That but if you're not looking for it, then you wouldn't know what you're going to get. And if you didn't know, when I was in San Francisco, I heard some rumblings about this, but there was a club, the Mabuhay Gardens, in a part of San Francisco. And originally, because it's Mabuhay Gardens, was a Filipino restaurant, but whoever was the manager at that point in the 70s decided, oh, hey, let's get some punk bands in here. And a lot of the early punk pioneers played at this Filipino restaurant slash club and in the 70s in San Francisco. And I think that little kind of trivia tends to whet the appetite a little bit to get people to understand that when you really even just take the one step of saying, let me find out about someone who doesn't share my experience, who is not like me, then you're going to reap all of these really, really great nerdy facts.
Yes. Yeah. And also, like, understand how those contributions are to the bigger global culture and American culture at large and history at large, right? As we were saying earlier, it's not just learning Filipino American history just and how only it's impacting Filipino Americans, you know, but how it's impacting, in fact, American culture and American history.
Yes.
So October is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month, right? And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about how domestic violence affects the Filipino American community.
Domestic violence affects all communities.
Yes.
So I guess if we're talking about how it affects Filipino Americans, we can talk about the particular cultural barriers that exist that make domestic violence not necessarily more prevalent than other communities, but that it looks a certain way, and it is. It brings about reactions, and it is also silenced in a very way that is very specific, in a way that is specific to Filipinos and the cultural baggage that we bring.
So would you be able to share with us some of the challenges that you see with the way that that we support or not domestic violence survivors in this country and in the Filipino community?
So when I was in New York, I did support a lot of social justice and other kinds of community advocacy organizations. One of the organizations that I was aware of, and a lot of my friends and colleagues, because that's who I surround myself with, are people who believe in social justice. They would support this organization called the New York Asian Women's Center, NYAWC. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the few, there were some others, but it was one of the few women's shelters that had the resources either in language and also in the background of the staff and volunteers who work there to be able to meet the needs of Asian Pacific American women who wanted to find a safe space for themselves after experiencing domestic violence. And so the hardest thing about it is that not enough people recognize that, one, there is a need to deliver culturally specific assistance in all things, but especially when violence is involved. Mm-hmm. I think I listen to a lot of people talking about solutions to cultural insensitivity, that training, that more training or better training should be provided to people who are in those positions where they can help. And that's true, but I also think that if communities do not educate themselves and are not making it possible to have productive dialogues around issues of violence, then how are you going to create the momentum and the pressure that is needed to push authorities or people who have the means to fund trainings for, let's say, the NYPD? Mm-hmm. How are you going to make it impossible for them to ignore you? Mm-hmm. Because that's really what tends to happen about changes to policies, necessary changes, to make very inequitable policies more equitable, is that communities have to band together and say no more. Mm-hmm.
Would you give an example as to what would be a good way, a culturally sensitive way to approach a Filipina, for example?
I can definitely give a culturally specific one, but I think even just anyone who encounters a potential victim of DV, domestic violence, immediately, the first thing I just have to just ask is that you believe them.
Yes.
And that sounds like such a small thing, but not everyone is aware of microaggressions in their speech, in their immediate reactions to hearing someone's story, or even just suspicion about that going on. It is common to have maybe the listener ask questions, but to be careful in the questions that you ask, that you don't make the person feel like then they have to be on the defensive and then reply to you in a way to prove mm-hmm. that they're experiencing violence, that they have to make it clear to you and expend unnecessary energy in trying to get you to even accept that this is reality, that this is real, that it is happening. Mm-hmm. And if you just take the leap already, just go jump right on, jump in their ship, I think you're going to help that person so much more.
Mm-hmm.
So that applies to just any woman, whatever her background.
Yes. Tonight, we're all alone tonight. There's never been a moment that trembled like tonight. I read your eyes tonight. I see your love I've always known. That once again is mine. I need to know, are you real? Do you feel the way I feel? Could you love like I love you? Say you can and say you do. Say you'll stay by my side. Say it's more than just tonight. Say love will live.
That was Kai with Say You'll Stop. They are an all-Filipino 90s R&B boy band. You're listening to Bread and Roses. Tonight, we honor Filipino-American History Month, and we also recognize October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Bread and Roses member Delphine Crescenzo sat with local activist Pamela Santos to discuss how domestic violence is impacting the Filipino community in the U.S. Here is Pamela Santos.
I think what I can say about Filipino Americans is that there's a lot of, and by the way, I'm very cognizant of my privilege that I get to count as friends and colleagues, very smart people who have written books just about this, about the kind of norms and the values that are prevalent in Filipino, from the Philippine society. One of those books was Filipino American Psychology by Dr. Kevin Nadal, in New York. And, he talks a little bit about this, and there are definitely other scholars who have talked about this. There's values of, and they're interrelated, pakikisama. So I'll try to say it again. Pakikisama is a Filipino norm, a value about sama. The root word is to join. So you're saying to join the group. But the value itself can be roughly understood. And the amazing thing about Filipinos is trying to encapsulate extremely large ideas into itty-bitty words. Just one word, singular word. And the big idea that Pakikisama is trying to explain is the pressure to join the group by proving yourself worthy of joining, that you're worthy of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times, let's say if an older generation Filipino is using that word, it's to encourage somebody else to conform. And so encouraging that person not to make waves,
mm-hmm.
don't confront, don't don't go against the prevailing mainstream position or view. And if that mainstream or that prevailing dominant position is that abuse of any kind is to be tolerated, then you better sit down and shut up. That is what that value is particularly doing to affect Filipina American domestic violence victims and survivors. And when you're also saying, and this is a value that's in the Philippines, it's not specific to Filipino immigrants coming to America or the diaspora spread around the world. This is actually a value in Philippine society. Mm-hmm. And I found some commonalities with other East Asian societies. The conformity, I think, and I'm sorry, I don't have the phrase for it, mm-hmm. but in Japanese culture, the nail that sticks out will be hammered down.
Mm-hmm.
So just that if you are sticking your head out from the crowd, you are going to be, you know, hammered back down.
Put back everybody. In your place.
Yes. And so that's a value, and it definitely reflects a passive aggression mm-hmm. to comply with whatever idealized a lot of times views that are prevailing. It also relates to another value called utang na loob. So utang na loob literally means utang is debt, na of loob is loosely inside. So a debt of inside. And it refers, and I'm not saying that this is the exact translation because, again, big idea, little, you know, little words. The big idea is that you owe a debt of gratitude to people outside of yourself. And somebody like myself could take that, who believes in social justice and equity, could say, yes, yes, I have a debt of gratitude to people outside of myself. But the meaning, the actual lesson of that is to say that you owe compliance outside of yourself. You owe people outside of yourself your when you're saying gratitude, you're saying you owe them your willingness to go along with what they're doing, saying. And a lot of that value is referenced in, let's say, parents trying to instill obedience from their children, or people in authority having that desire to promote obedience as well. So those kinds of values that are putting pressure together on Filipina women to stay silent is what keeps them in dangerous situations mm-hmm. that could get them killed someday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk a little bit about, thank you, first of all, for that insight into those cultural norms. I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the scenarios of domestic violence, because I do believe that there are Americans, white Americans of several generations who do end up marrying Filipinas, some of them even going out of their way to travel to the Philippines to pick the right one. And some of them, in fact, do this for the because of the specific values that you just shared. And even if they did not, they end up bringing their wives back to the United States, and the immigration status kind of puts these women in a position where the husband is kind of more powerful, has the authority, and could potentially create tensions around what happens in the household.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I get to talk about yellow fever. because of it. We were talking earlier about microaggressions, and microaggressive language, I think can be blamed a little bit about, or misconceptions about Asian women being subservient, obedient, or quiet and demure and meek. And while a lot of Filipinas like to, and like myself too, I'm included, like to say that we don't act in maybe similar ways that East Asian women act, we, I've been told we're louder. there is still that prevailing misconception. I can't even say it as an idea because it's not true. And that infects people's consciousness. And that's when they're infected with the wrong idea, then yes, they're going to act on that wrong idea with wrong actions. And that could include white men feeling empowered with their privilege to go to an Asian country to pick a bride. There were documentaries even recently on, on mail order brides or that dynamic. And when you're already bringing that kind of level of ignorance, I have to call it what it is, ignorance to a relationship, you are coloring that relationship forever. And it can be difficult for, let's say, a Filipina, especially if her immigration status or citizenship status is connected to her husband, then it can be even more difficult for her to leave if he is abusive. There was a Filipino human services agency that I was a part of in New York, and one of the executive directors had recently commented on her time fielding calls from Filipina immigrants or women who were asking for help to get out of their dangerous situations, but noting that they may be undocumented or not, or they may have definite economic repercussions and consequences if they wanted to really save their lives. If they wanted to be safe, they are risking so much more outside of that, that they are almost, because they will suffer punitive effects by leaving, then they are incentivized by that to stay in dangerous situations. And the hardest thing about that is that the executive director fielding these calls, or the staff fielding these calls, having their hands tied because there aren't enough resources. One shelter, the New York Asian Women's Center, just having one center is not enough for all of the women who need it in the five boroughs of New York, let alone even just the large Filipina American population in New York City. If you're having beds of less than 100, and it is less, I believe it's about 43 beds for all of New York City, you're going to have to turn women away. And I don't want to say turn women away, but more of come up with alternate safety plans, and sometimes having that knowledge about immigration status related to their partner tends to help at least direct them to, I don't even want to say the safe option, but the safer mm-hmm. option for them that they can undertake. Mm-hmm. I think outside of, let's say, Filipino Americans, I think it is then difficult when you complicate the situation with immigration status. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to unpack it, that could be an issue to complicate the situation. Mm-hmm. But then where do you go where do you go from there? Do you try to be sympathetic and then tell her to stay where she is mm-hmm. in the dangerous situation? And that actually happens. People do say that stuff. They'll say, well, you don't want to be on the street. You don't want to be deported. You don't want to lose your home, your life. Just go along. Just go along with it for a little bit. Or just do this or do this to minimize the damage. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I feel that contributes to the problem by perpetuating.
Completely.
But then what is the solution? Do you offer refugee status? Do you offer a different kind of protected status to, victims of violence? Do you give them that opportunity to save their own lives by telling them it's okay, we're not going to send you away. We're not going to punish you for wanting to take charge of your own life. Mm-hmm. It's good to be sensitive. It's good to be aware. It's not good to assume. Mm-hmm. So I definitely, because lots of people's words can be taken out of context. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't want anyone listening to come away with the permission that they can assume that Filipina American women largely have questionable or undocumented status.
Absolutely.
So I definitely don't want that to happen, but that you just recognize that it does happen, mm-hmm. that it does occur. It does occur in interracial mm-hmm. Marriages and such, that power dynamic you were talking about, mm-hmm. so
For these women, they actually do have a legal status, but it's dependent on the husband.
Yes, I would rather blame immigration policies that force them into that
Absolutely.
Position of disempowerment, to have to seek their own empowerment of legal status through their husband. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
But let's not victim blame. Let's not have the free rein to suddenly shine a spotlight.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that we at least got to touch upon yes. a few of these important issues that really need to be talked about, but that really are not safely, I want to say, talked about.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have you back on Bread and Roses for sure, Pamela.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela Santos, for being with us.
You are listening to Bread and Roses. Tonight, we played an interview with Pamela Santos in honor of Filipino American History Month and to highlight Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Pamela is a new KBOO volunteer working with the APA Compass Collective and on her own podcast coming soon, Geek as Verb. Pamela was here in the studio tonight and she handpicked all the music that was played and turned us on to a bunch of Filipina and Filipino artists. Thank you so much, Pamela. Thank you, Delphine, for that another wonderful interview. And thank you all for listening to Bread and Roses. We truly appreciate all the support you gave us during the recent membership drive. Thanks so much and have a great weekend. See you next week.
Na da ha ha ha. Na da ha ha ha. I'm Rusty Butler, a Siletz tribal member. I got in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old and spent my teenage years behind the bars. My culture and traditions helped me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Nanta Srinagi Thai. Nanta ha ha ha. Nanta ha.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Muertos Northwest's 6th Annual Celebration Under the Bridge on Dia de los Muertos, Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. This year's celebration will include the creation of altars, sugar skull decorating, Muertos face painting for all ages, Muertos storytelling, and live music by Los Tex-Maniacs. Again, that's Muertos Northwest's 6th Annual Celebration Under the Bridge, Saturday, November 1st from 1 p.m. to midnight at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Right now, it's 7:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Radio. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio. KBOO Portland, Oregon.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?